So understanding how to be kind to ourselves. When we hear those negative thought patterns, where are they coming from? Why am I having this conversation with myself? Why am I so hard on myself? And then practice empathy and compassion, not only for our other relationships, but primarily for ourselves. Start with you. Welcome to another episode of Relentlessly Resilient, presented by Minky Couture, where real people share real life experiences and the tools they develop to move forward and live their best life. I'm Michelle Scharf.
And I'm Jenny Taylor. And here it is, spring in Utah, which of course means it's freezing and then it's warm and then it's rainy and then it's sunny. And I am so glad that I have a couple different Minkies in my home. Some are warmer, some are lighter. I don't know what kind of blanket I need this time of year, but I'm glad that I have them. And those Minkies are just so soft and so luxurious. You can find them 6 locations in store right here in Utah or MinkyCouture.com, regardless of where you live.
Awesome. Today, Jenny, we're going to talk about self-awareness and why it's important.
And why it's difficult. Acknowledge for me. I mean, how many of us are very self-aware for someone else? Like, I can tell you about you. And sometimes we have, you know, we speak of rose-colored glasses. I think sometimes we wear our own inhibiting glasses to ourselves. Maybe mm-hmm. we don't want to be self-aware, or maybe we just don't know how or the value of it. So you do life coaching. You've done a lot of training to be where you are in your life coaching world. I would love to learn. I think I'll be more of a student today, and you can maybe be the instructor. Let's talk about this. I think it's very important.
I started about 30 years ago going to a training that really is based on self-awareness, where you go through a series of exercises that allows you to see yourself in a different way, a little bit as if like a mirror is being presented to you. So we all have like the image of who we think we are in our minds, but sometimes we don't always know like what is being projected out into the world. And I think that a good illustration of this is like sometimes you meet someone and you walk away and you go, wow, that person is just really angry. Right.
And you can feel that.
You can feel it. You can see it on their face. They wear it, you know, and you have this projection of this person being angry. They may not even be aware right. that what they're projecting is anger, because their self-awareness of their own lives may be very
buried in the anger. Well, I'm kind of laughing because I'm thinking of one of my sons who was very angry for the mm-hmm. first few years right after Brent died, and openly, like we can joke about it now. Ha ha. Mm-hmm. Remember that time? But we had a similar conversation to where you could spend 5 minutes in the room with him and you knew he was angry. He was anger personified. But if you said anything to him about, I'm not angry, you know, he wasn't able to see that, maybe wasn't willing to see that, wasn't in a mindset to see that. But it has caused me to reflect, when am I maybe projecting something that I'm not aware of? Mm-hmm. Because his was so obvious. We'd be like, bro, you can't tell me you can't see this.
Yeah.
But he didn't. But he didn't see it because he was so deep in it.
Yes. And part of that is because some people can be dealing with life traumas or not dealing with life traumas.
Right.
But they're hanging on to the emotion that they've attached themselves to regarding that. And it becomes part of their identity or part of their personality. So I just wanted to discuss today a little bit about the value of self-awareness. It's the first foundational piece to building resilience. Because part of the first step of resilience, as we know, we've talked about it several times on our show, is calling things for what they are.
Right.
But if you can't see yourself for how you are or who you are, how can you see other situations for what they are?
So how do we do it? Any idea? Like let's say I am genuine in wanting to be self-aware. Mm-hmm. I might admit maybe that's a struggle. Like you said, there's maybe the persona we think we throw out into the world versus the persona other people perceive of us in the world versus the persona we'd like to work toward throwing right. into the world, right? We're all works yeah. in progress. So walk us through, is there some guidelines or maybe reflection we can do to take a look at that mirror without being scared to death of what we see? Because I yeah. picture like Beauty and the Beast, where maybe he doesn't want to see the mirror. I'd like to pretend I'm still a nice, handsome prince, but maybe there's some beast inside of me, whether that's sadness or anger or bitterness or what, that I'd like to work through. How do I start?
Right. So first of all, we all have all of those pieces as part of who we are, right? So we are not joy personified 100% of the day, every single day. That's ridiculous as well. You've come across people that you walk away and you're like, oh, toxic positivity overload. Like, that is so Pollyanna. Unreal, you know? And that doesn't feel good to us either, right? Because it doesn't feel real. Because it's not authentic, right? Yeah. We want to connect with people that are authentic. And in order to be authentic, we have to be aware of the things we've come through, who we are because of those things. And a good way to start is to take a moment to be present. And being present seems like, oh, well, yeah, yeah, sure, I can be present. However, being present is much more difficult, especially in today's world.
Busy world of distractions.
We all have a phone in our hand. And the moment anyone has a phone in their hand, we immediately know that their attention is not
somewhere else.
Present. They're not present. They're somewhere else. We don't know where that place is. It could be a tunnel of a myriad of places, right? It could be any kind of social media, a person that they're directly connecting to. It might be really important.
Yeah.
But the message it sends is, I'm not important.
I'm somewhere else.
Right?
Yeah.
They are somewhere else. They are not present with me. I have this trigger with my kids. When my kids see a phone in my hand, it is a mad trigger for them. Because when they were little, I didn't have a lot of support around. I didn't have like a family around to help me raise my kids. I didn't have aunt and uncles to go drop them off and just get a break or anything.
Catch your
breath. So I would be on the phone with friends and talking about them, and they would hear that. And that would upset them. It was my release. So I didn't, you know, hurt my children.
We all have to go somewhere.
Right? Because there are those real moments where kids are challenging and they test you to your very core.
Absolutely.
But for my children, it's a trigger for them. And it is for all of us. Mm. So I think it's Simon Sinek. He has a YouTube that I've seen a million times. Little clips on TikTok or Reels on Facebook or Instagram. And he talks about, you know, they've done a study and he's like, take out your phone. And he's like, okay, now the moment I'm holding my phone, how do you feel? Well, I don't feel like you're here with me. Yeah. The moment we have a phone in our hand, we are no longer present with a person, real or imagined. Our attention is slightly somewhere else.
Somewhere else.
So being present is really learning how to be present with the person that we're with. That may mean we put our phone away. We turn our watch alerts off. There's a lot of ways that we are distracted by electronics that we have become numb to.
Right.
That we just disregard or accept as part of our new social culture. But the reality is we may accept them, but they still make us unpresent.
Right.
So part of this is learning how to be present. It's a great way to start with yourself. So take off your watch, put your phone away, learn how to sit with yourself. Now, I'm going to say it's easier to do this with someone else first, where you learn to just be present with the person you're talking to.
Than to be present on your own.
Than to be present on your own. And the reason I say that is because so many people, we're so distracted by everything outside of us, we don't know how to sit with ourselves. And sometimes that can be very scary. So you can either practice this on your own or, you know, with a person, but take off all of the distractions. Put the phone on silent. Do not disturb. Take off the watch. Get rid of the alerts.
Give yourself a break from that.
Take a complete, you know, set aside 15 minutes, 20 minutes where you say, this time is for me. Or if you want to practice with your child or whatever, or your partner, you could do that with them as well. Where you take 20 minutes and you're going to say, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to be present and I'm going to breathe and let's focus on our breathing. And we just pay attention to our breath. That's the first easiest way to practice, is through our breath. It's powerful. It helps regulate our emotions, reduce stress. It fosters deeper connections with our inner world. And you just really want to focus on the rise of your diaphragm. So the rise of your stomach as you inhale in, because it should go out when we're breathing appropriately, and breathing in through our nose and then out through our mouth. And so a lot of people, there's different ways to do this, and there's yogis that teach this and different breathing techniques. But I like to do what's called box breathing, and you breathe in 1, 2, 3, 4, out 2, 3, 4, in 2, 3, 4, out 2, 3. So you're doing it like a box in the count of four. It's just a good visual.
A so box has four sides. Each breath in or out is a side of a box.
Yes. And okay, then, I've seen that one. You know, as you get better, you can extend that, right? And you could do rectangle breathing, which is breathe longer. Long, slow in for 8 counts and exhale for 10 counts or whatever. So you can change it up a little bit. But it's a good way to start practicing and being mindful of just of our breath. And at first, 2 or 3 minutes of this may seem like a very long time. It's kind of like the first time you go back to the gym and you're like, okay, let's do 100 push-ups. And you're like, I can't do 10.
You're like 5 push-ups in.
Right.
I'm dying.
You're like, oh, that was great. I can do 2 or 3 or 4.
So whatever even starting
it is, it's
small.
A practice. Yeah.
Yes. Have you read the book Atomic Habits?
Yes, I have.
I love that one where you have the principle that just start.
Right.
If you want to be the type of person that is reflective and self-aware, do the thing a self-aware person would do, which might be put your phone down and sit still for a minute. And even if you only do that for like a second or a minute. First time, don't try. I think I'm guilty of this sometimes where I'll have the goal. Mm-hmm. And then I want to jump from 0 to 60 on the goal like today. And then, of course, what do I do is fall short. And then it gets lost. But I love the principle of, like you've said, maybe the first thing you're going to do is just put the phone and the distractions away and breathe for a few minutes.
Right.
What if you just started with that? And then
I would say, for those of you who want to change some habits, hiring a life coach is a great way to start with those. And this would be a great way. And a life coach might encourage this and probably would, especially if you're struggling with just that very act of being self-aware. I like to tell people, like, you have to set yourself up to change the habit. So you have to give yourself cues and triggers. So we're going to kind of pivot here for a minute.
Yeah, I love this.
And my idea, and it's a little bit off of Atomic Habits, but also Jay Shetty talks about this in the training that
I
took.
Yeah.
It's really good to set cues and clues for success.
Okay.
So I was doing really great at doing yoga every single day. And what I had decided to do was just roll my yoga mat from between my bed and the bathroom. So I'd wake up in the morning, I'd roll over, I'd see the yoga mat, I'd get up, use the restroom, come back, and I had my iPad there for my yoga practice. And then I just did it. I did it every single day, and I did that pretty quickly. Now, there are some life things that happen, and I had stopped laying out that yoga mat, and to restart that up again, I had to do the same thing. So I have a yoga room in my house for me. I don't ever do yoga in the yoga room. I do my mindfulness meditation there, and I do some other exercises there.
But the yoga's got to be just right there.
The yoga has to be right there. And here's the thing. When I do my yoga in the morning, then it's really easy for me to do my meditation or mindfulness practice right after that. And then it's really easy to go in and do my protein shake and take my daily vitamins. So for me, it's a thread of habits.
The one naturally feeds the next you're trying to do.
And it creates an entire perfect kind of calendar or perfect day for me when I set out those things to do. And it just starts with a yoga mat. So, you know, if anyone's struggling with creating a habit, getting rid of a bad habit or whatever, I would really encourage either therapy. But therapy may be overkill for just building habits. So a life coach is the perfect thing to do for that. So the one thing we can do is just practice our breath. And that one practice alone can be really important. After whatever practice you choose that we're going to go over here, you're going to want to take a few minutes to self-reflect. How did I start? How did I feel when I started the practice? How did I feel while I was doing the practice? And where am I now? And mostly, I have never felt worse after mindfulness. I've always felt more regulated, balanced, and calm, right?
Right.
So this is not something that should fire you up. However, if something's coming up in your mindful practice, it might be an opportunity for you to either consider, is this something I can handle on my own? Or is this something that therapy would be important? Do I need to talk to somebody else about this?
Maybe it's a little bit bigger of an issue.
Yeah, and maybe a life coach would be a good thing. The next thing we could do is take a body scan. And what you want to do is you want to start at the top of your head and just scan your body. Like, how is my brain feeling? Do I have a headache? Is there tension? Where are my muscles tight in my face? Are my eyes sore? Can I see clearly? What do my ears feel like? Do I have pain in my ears? Am I hearing tinnitus? Is it really loud today? Is it quiet today? What are the differences? You know, where is it in this moment? How does my throat feel? Is it tight? Am I holding back some energy or tension in my throat? Can I swallow freely? And just all the way through our body, right? Just an entire scan. I like to do this laying down personally. And I like to envision that while I'm laying down, there's this beam of light and it's as tall as the wall in my house. And it fills an entire line across me. And it just literally
goes from top to bottom.
It just goes from top to bottom. As I move this light through my body, I'm just taking account of everything that I'm feeling and any areas of tightness or soreness. You know, I have a problem in my hip. Maybe I need to see the chiropractor. You know, I feel like my spine might be out of alignment. It's pinching on some muscles here. Whatever it is, just take note, right? You're not judging it. You're just taking note of these things. And you just kind of do a body scan. And then, of course, this helps to foster a couple things. Number one, it puts you into your body. So it gets you very present and in your body.
Instead of just rushing through.
Right. It also makes you very aware of what's going on in your body, which sometimes we never check in with our body. And our bodies have
screaming
pain for a reason.
Yeah.
It's to teach us and to tell us something's not right here. And it fosters relaxation. So it's a great practice to do. Again, anytime you do any of these things, you should maybe take note.
I was just going to ask that. So
reflect.
Do you recommend like a physical note? I'm thinking about it. Am I maybe writing something down?
I think it depends on you. Like
personality dependent?
I think it's personality dependent. And I think it's like maybe if you notice something that maybe you're like, I need to take note of this because I'm not sure I've noticed this before.
Yeah, maybe I've been pushing through.
Maybe I've been pushing through and I haven't been paying attention. And if you're going to continue to do this practice, it might be good to just make a little journal. You know, I have chronic pain in my right shoulder. I have this going on. I have that. And if it changes, then you have a baseline, right? You know,
I think that would be helpful for me. I think sometimes if I do something like this, I might think, well, how long has that been bothering me? Or is that normal? And maybe I don't know because each day blends into the next. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes I'll take note of something in my mind and then I'm going to just forget or lose track or get distracted. So for me, taking note, when you say take note, I'm thinking I've got a little notebook in my nightstand or wherever I am for this practice of trying to slow down and be self-aware. It's helpful for me if I'm literally taking some note.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
And that might just be a learning style. I'm a verbal type of learner. I need the words to kind of help.
I am too.
Put parameters
so
on
I
what
think
I'm
it,
feeling.
It's kind of like, I think it's just dependent on on you. There's no rules here,
sure.
Right? This is just kind of an overview and an idea of how to get present and in our bodies. So what's happening is a lot of times we think we are our bodies. but we don't necessarily pay attention to them because we kind of live in our mind. Mm. So for those that are walkers, you can practice mindfulness when you're walking. You're in nature. What are you smelling? You walk past Mr. Smith's fresh cut grass, but a few houses later, somebody spilled gasoline in the driveway, right? Whatever it is, you're like, you're just taking note of the environment that's around you. Oh, I smell this. I smell that. I heard the cat. I heard the dog. I heard that loud truck.
Instead of I heard the phone or I heard the podcast or I heard the thing that's constantly going in the background.
Right, the input. This is a time to unplug.
You're leaving all of that aside.
You're leaving that aside and you're actually connecting with where you're at in the world. Then there's a five senses exercise, and our five senses are see, hear, touch, smell, taste. And this can help strengthen present moment awareness and immerse yourself in full sensory experiences. So you can do things when you're eating. It smells. It feels this temperature. It tastes like this. It has this texture. It sounds like this when I eat it, right? You can put the five senses into your eating experience. So what I'm saying is none of these things you have to do like in a row in the morning, and you don't have to do them accumulatively. But if you get into the practice of becoming aware of mindfulness practices
throughout
and incorporate them into your day, they don't have to. You can do this washing your hands. The water sounds really crisp as it hits the drain, and it feels really warm across my hands, and I smell the soap, right? You can make a mindfulness practice of, for me, I was having a really hard time grounding, and I discovered that when I became really present in washing my hands, which sounds crazy, and this is post-COVID that I discovered this, but I would take the soap and wash it and smell the soap and really enjoy the bubbles across my hand and the texture of it. And then I would smell it, and then I would turn on the water and I would get the temperature just so, and I would really wash it, wash over me. And water is very grounding.
Right.
I would envision all of the negative emotions and feelings going out through my bodies and down through my arms and out through my hands and down through the drain.
And down the drain.
And it really helped me to ground, especially during the winter when we have a hard time getting outside and actually taking our shoes off and connecting with the ground. So,
well, that's incredible. I love how you've mentioned an opportunity to be mindful and even grounded in a part of your day today.
Yeah, it doesn't
have to. So even on a busy day, you're going to wash your hands at some point.
Right. If you use the restroom, please wash your hands and take the moment to actually
spend. And be in the moment of washing your hands.
Right. Huh. Spend the 10, 15 seconds that you should at least be washing your hands and actually get present for it.
And let that be ground to
it. Let it become your mindful practice.
I never would have thought of something like that. I would have, in my mind, I default to thinking, well, now I got to make time to be grounded, or I got to schedule to be mindful. And that can have its place.
Right.
But what if we just, I love that you mentioned having a more mindful mindset. I can be mindful maybe when I'm waiting in line at the grocery store. That can be a time to breathe rather than a time to scroll or a time to look at something or worry about the fact that the line's moving slowly. I can think through different moments in my day when I'm probably still firing all cylinders of my poor little brain. That maybe that could be the grounding within the day.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't have to
and
be.
And I have to say,
separate.
For me, I was raised very religious as a young girl in a missionary Baptist. And they never came out and say this, but I felt like over the years and being LDS for a very long time and active in that faith as well, the faith encourage all faiths, religion, encourages so much external service and work. All of that is really important. Mm. And it's important to our well-being as well. But the one thing they neglect is to connect us to ourselves, the practice of mindfulness.
The internal.
Because if we're not driving from the internal locus of control, are what we can do and what we can't do, then oftentimes we're giving of an empty well. And it's not helpful. It's not building us up. It's burning us out. So this is, I feel.
Which is so common.
It's so common.
I mean, how many people do you know on a day-to-day basis, we just run around burnt out?
Oh, yeah. And they and run around
never
thinking,
really recharge.
I need to serve this. I need to make this cake for so-and-so's whatever. And I need to make this dinner for so-and-so's lost. There's, right? Well, there's a lot of responsibility
or even your home,
on
your family,
women.
Your job. It is. Right. It's on your shoulders. One more thing.
Right. So it's really sad because I feel like what ends up happening is we don't take this moment for ourselves. Then we do things, but we're not really doing them from
the
right
not really into it. Yeah.
Space. And so we're not really getting the benefit of that either. So
now we've
which
just
brings
stressed
us
ourselves
to loving kindness meditation.
So loving kindness.
Loving kindness. And it's
I'm
really
good notes here.
It's really about taking the time to, when we have these mindfulness moments that we incorporate into our day, there may be times or moments where we hear thoughts that come into our mind. And they may be negative thoughts. They may be like, you're not good enough. You said something to someone. You may have hurt them. I feel bad about myself. Or I know I said this. I know they took it wrong. And I now feel bad. Right.
Yeah.
So you're reliving things in your head and you're in this negative thought pattern. And so the idea is to extend compassion and kindness the way that you extend it to everyone around you, to yourself. So when you notice those negative thoughts, you can have a conversation with yourself. I'm going to send this person some well wishes and love. I'm going to take accountability for the thing that I said and clarify the intent behind my words. It can be a time to actually plan to discover what needs to be managed in our conversations with others that are maybe bringing us some sadness and negative self-talk to ourselves. And the challenging part may be in actually taking action on those things, because it may be fearful to actually go back to someone and say, I know I said this to you, but my intent was this, and I am so sorry.
I'm
because
sorry.
The moment I said it, I saw your reaction and I understand that I hurt you and that was not my intention and now I am feeling hurt, right? It's about taking accountability. It's not about blame. It's not about being right or wrong. And we need to learn how to do that with ourselves. So understanding how to be kind to ourselves. When we hear those negative thought patterns, where are they coming from? Why am I having this conversation with myself? Why am I so hard on myself? And then practice empathy and compassion, not only for our other relationships, but primarily for ourselves. Start with you, because unless you can extend your self-compassion, you can't really genuinely extend it to others. Last thing I want to talk about, and I know we're getting short on time here, but mindful art. This is an opportunity to get hands-on. We have a producer, our producer Kellyanne. She's amazing and she is very talented, and she also has very many talented friends. And there's a myriad of things that I've seen that she's brought in or has created, worked with an artist for Christmas cards and calendars. Yeah. She's felting. She's got this cute, adorable little bunny with a heart on today. All kinds of things. And so those kinds of things we can do. We can color. I love to color with my grandkids. I'm always sad when my grandkids are ready to stop coloring, because I am never ready to stop coloring once I begin. And it has been so therapeutic.
Do you like crayons?
For me.
Do you like colored pencils? What
I like all of it, but I prefer if it's fine outline prints. I like to do the colored pencils with very sharp pencils.
I was going to say, it has to be a very sharp colored pencil. Mm-hmm. And we need a pencil sharpener.
Yeah. Oh, my granddaughter loves running that pencil sharpener.
There's nothing better than a brand new box of crayons. Can I just throw that out? Like a brand, they can be 50 cents at back to school season. Once they're just all stubby, they just don't need to be as long as they are, because they just need the crisp tip.
Yeah. And I'm going to tell you what I've been doing with my grandkids lately. We've been picking up little sun catchers and we've been painting them. Dollar Tree has for $1.25. You can get the Disney princesses and it comes with the paints, but be careful. Those things are buggers. I destroyed a brand new jacket that I had on.
Opening the stupid paints.
Yeah. But anyway, they're great. They're an opportunity to kind of, you know, do something with your child. It's an opportunity to teach them some mindfulness during this period.
Mindful art, you don't have to be, like, I do not consider myself overly artistically talented. Like, if I were to draw something, you would not be very impressed. Mm-hmm. But I can still benefit from that mindful art. Or I like sometimes to sit down and play the piano or something. Yeah. There's different forms of art. Some people are dancers.
Right.
But there's something beautiful in the human power to create.
Yes.
Right? What are you creating? We're creating something.
Yeah, I don't even like to keep the things that I'm making with my grandkids. That's not the point for me,
The point is to be present
with my grandchildren.
So do not discount this just if you're not very artistic like me. Don't use that as an excuse to not be involved
in creative excellence. My daughter went to Five Below and they have these cute little hexagon framed little glasses with etched like lemon and limes on them. And they come with their own paints. They're acrylic paints, but you can paint these things. My daughter-in-law's and my grandchildren, we all did them.
So you're not just watching the kids have a great time. I'll be honest, I threw mine away. The moment with them.
I'm not ever going to hang this up and I don't need more junk in the house. But that wasn't the purpose, right?
The purpose was to create this thing.
It was to be present with my grandkids doing a project that was the same or similar.
Busy bustling around the kitchen while they're creating.
Right.
You're actually with them.
Yeah. Yep.
I need to work on that because I'll get craft things out for the kids while I do the dishes or while I make dinner. But it's very rare that I might sit with them and say, we're going to play Play-Doh.
How often do we do that as busy parents?
Mostly never.
Right.
Yeah. This is going to be a note to me.
I think one of the reasons that my grandkids enjoy coming to my house is we don't do screens at all, which is funny because they have them all the time, really a lot at home. And they come to my house and they insist on bringing them. I never make an issue out of it because I know that they're going to get dropped on the couch and never picked up again
because
the whole time.
Other opportunities.
Because I'm present with my grandkids. I brought them over to spend time with them. So we bake. We do an art project. We color.
Well, baking can be art. I mean, there's different ways to create, right? What are we creating? Are you creating something delicious to eat or something beautiful to look at?
We get out a puzzle. We create trains. I have a dyno train connector that I bought several extensions. And we put batteries in the dyno cars and we make track designs that are different
every time. I think we all want to go to Grandma Michelle's house. Like,
absolutely.
This sounds fun. I'm coming over.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a million things that we can do, right? And the great thing is that we can teach all of these practices to our children and they can be more aware. I wish I would have done this when my children were much younger because I feel like my children would have been more aware and more able to communicate to me, what are you feeling? I remember asking
because
my kids.
Because they might not know.
I remember asking them all the time, just tell me what you're feeling. And I was so aggravated as a mother, like I would get angry about it. And looking back, I'm like, oh, I didn't teach them the capacity to check in with themselves. Like, how would they know, right?
Right.
They're just a little being with all this emotion
and then I'm starting to
dump more emotion into the situation. So I'm not helping anything.
No, that's really good insight because
my kids are really good with their kids. They have taught themselves
mindfulness.
My daughter works with her daughter all the time in managing and regulating her emotions.
Wow.
And so my little 4-year-old granddaughter will tell me, I just need some space and I need to take a moment to breathe. She's 4.
Wow.
Yeah, she's going to be much more emotionally intelligent than any kid her age.
Well, and I'm thinking what I was going to say, almost the opposite of that. There's a generation of kids growing up with a screen everywhere, with a distraction everywhere, with 5 or 6 things dinging at them all of the time. And so unless they're getting that very intentional mindfulness training, they're not going to just stumble on it.
Right.
Like previous generations might have stumbled on a quiet walk from point A to point B. We're not. We're in the car. What's on in the car? The radio, the music, the podcast, the phone, so many things.
Yeah, we have an opportunity
that these kids have never
to be completely disconnected from reality all the time.
All the time.
And what is
reality? We can drown
ourselves
in it.
Right. What is reality anyway, right? Well, unless we take away all the distractions and spend some time with ourselves, we don't even know what our own reality is.
And we might not know what we're feeling or what we need.
Right. And so then what happens when a crisis comes along? We don't know where we're at. We feel we've been thrown this crisis. Yeah. And then how do you process that when you're in a state of total confusion, completely disconnected.
There's no strong baseline for when it's
there's
not in chaos.
There's nothing to build resilience on. And that's the point of our talking today. Part of all of these mindfulness is about shifting the mindset, recognizing your thought patterns, challenging your negative self-talk, replacing negative thinking with more adaptive thinking. I can't do that. I haven't been able to do that yet, but I'm learning. I get to do that. It's an opportunity.
Rather than I have to do that. Yes. It's one more thing expected of me.
I always make mistakes. I make mistakes sometimes. Mistakes happen and I learn from them, right? Reframe, reframe, reframe. Cultivating a solution-focused mindset. So, okay, I've had the setbacks. Setbacks are a part of life. What is in my power to control about the setback? What are the things I can do and take action on? Gratitude journaling. It is the absolute key to abundance in our life. When we start recognizing and acknowledging the things that we are truly grateful for, both big and large, we foster a sense of abundance and we start seeing the magic and the blessings that are bound in our life. And we all have them. We all have them.
We just might be moving so quickly we don't even recognize them. Yeah.
And then, you know, I would say, you know, learn from role models. Be careful who you surround yourself. Create a supportive environment. Make sure that you have people that can, that you encourage them to express their feelings and they provide constructive feedback when you provide yours, and that they can help reframe negative thought patterns and you can do that for them as well. You know, we could get into a whole nother level of this about enhancing our self-observation skills. And a lot of that is through taking action by actual thought recording where we write it down, or thought and emotion recording when we're like, you could use your voice recorder on your phone, and just processing and hearing the self-talk. Like when you start hearing those voices in your head, start recording them into a recorder and go listen to them. Are you really talking
to
yourself that way?
Interesting. Really interesting.
And then you can empower yourself by playing role-playing scenarios and setting intentions. So when you're doing your yoga practice or your mindfulness practice, let's say you're not even doing exercise right now. You only have 10 minutes where you are going to allocate 10 minutes to change one thing today. I'm going to challenge our listeners to just add mindfulness into it, but completely disconnected mindful, only 10 minutes. And what can you do in that 10 minutes? After you notice whether it's you're doing a body check or whether you're just breathing, and after you reflect on your emotions, how you began the practice, how you ended the practice, take a moment to set an intention for your day.
10 minutes. We're going to start with 10 minutes.
10 minutes.
Completely disconnected.
Yeah. I would just like to say in 6 steps, step 1 would be set aside your time for mindfulness. 2, find a quiet space or time in nature. Maybe you don't have a quiet space in your house. You probably do not.
Go somewhere else.
So you might need to go walk over to your farm, mini farm, even if it's not, there's nothing in it, right?
Go somewhere else,
Just find a space in nature or a quiet place. Step 3, mindful breathing. Just focus on that breath. Step 4, observe your thoughts. Step 5, extend mindfulness in daily activities, whether that's eating, breathing, brushing your teeth, washing your hands. And then step 6 would be take a moment to reflect. How was this experience? How did it when I feel when it started? And how do I feel now?
Those are all so beautiful and so simple, and yet how many of us actually ever do them? You know what I mean? I'm thinking of myself. I'm as guilty as the next guy. We just run from the time the alarm goes off in the morning till we fall into bed at night. We've done a million things all day. Did I do any of those 6 things? So thank you for this. This has been very helpful for me. I hope to our listeners as well to just think about what you think about.
Yeah. And I just want to really implore to our listeners, we really started this show because we wanted to connect people with that we are all dealing with so much hard. We all have our own challenges. They're all very different. And they come with a myriad of their own spicy other challenges, right? Because they don't happen just one at a time. No. So we're all dealing with a lot in this world, and the whole point is to understand what resilience is, what it means, and how to become and foster resiliency in our life so that we can be stronger not only for ourselves to face challenges when they come, but in our families and also in our communities. To me, it's really foundational.
Yeah, and you've given us some great foundations. So thank you, Michelle. Thank you to all of our listeners. We hope you've enjoyed what you've heard today on this co-host conversation. Thank you to our producer, Kellyanne Halverson. Thank you to our great sponsor, Minky. Remember, you can find them 6 Utah locations or online, minkycouture.com. And thanks for listening. We hope you'll go find us wherever you listen to us. And don't just find us there on that platform, but give us a like, a rating, and a review. It helps other people find the show, and it helps us make the show better. As always, if you're listening and you have an experience or a story that you're willing to share about resilience and the tools that you've developed in your life, we would love to connect with you. If you find us on social media at Relentlessly Resilient on Facebook or Relentlessly Resilient Podcast on Instagram, there's a quick little button where you can connect with Michelle to talk offline about what experience you might share, what tools you've learned, and we'll see if you're a good fit for the show.
And whatever you do today, remember to be kind. You have no idea the struggles others are dealing with in their lives. Have a great day.